Blog Talk Radio.
Moving is so much of who we are. It's easy to take it for granted. Multiple sclerosis stops people from moving. We exist to make sure it doesn't. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society is a collective of passionate individuals united by a common goal to address the challenges of each person whose life is affected by MS. We believe that moving is not just something you can or can't do, but rather it's who you are, that if you are alive, you move along with, because of, and in spite of the great big turning world. Join the movement, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, at nationalmssociety.org.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan of the show. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. This show is very personal to me this morning. My grandmother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis many, many moons ago. She has passed away, but I grew up with my grandmother having multiple sclerosis. Some of my memories are I remember her walker. I actually never remember her walking. I know she did walk when she was younger. I remember riding on her electric chair that went up and down her steps in her house. I remember getting in the car and my grandfather having to use a brown board. I would help get the brown board to slide her from the car into her wheelchair and vice versa. I remember doing her hair for her. And I'm sorry, I get a little emotional about this. You know, I remember being in her room and her laying in the bed in the bright sunlight in the room. And so this show is very important to me this morning. And I want people to know that this is a very devastating illness. And especially at the time when my grandmother had it, she did not have access to all the medicines that they have, all the resources that are available today. But there are many supports today that can make it easier. And that's why I named today's show Surviving and Thriving, because I know of so many options that are available today that weren't available to my grandmother, unfortunately. She did live a long life, and she had, you know, my grandfather, a wonderful husband to her, and my uncle and my mom and family that supported her. But on a wider scope, there are so many resources available to people that, as always, I do shows to try to make people more aware of things that are available to them or to their friends or family or husband or cousin or niece or nephew, whoever may be in need of, you know, different services. So today we're going to be talking with a wonderful guest. I want to thank Kevin Moffitt and Artie Rosenblatt from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society for connecting me with Dr. Sandra M. D'Antonio. Good morning, Dr. D'Antonio.
Good morning, Joy. Please call me Sandra.
Okay. Thank you.
And thank you for having me here.
Oh, thank you so much for waking up this morning. I know sometimes people sleep late on Saturdays. So
I've already had the dog
that.
To the vet, so it's fine.
Okay, all right. Let me just tell people a little bit about multiple sclerosis, exactly what it is. Multiple sclerosis is a chronic and often disabling disease that attacks the central nervous system. It's made up of the brain, spinal cord, and optic nerves. And everybody's symptoms are different. Some people have visual issues. Some people have balance. Some people have pain. Some people have stiffness. Some people paralysis issues. There's so many different symptoms. Everybody's symptoms are slightly different. Some people do have similar symptoms, but everybody's story is slightly different. And how people found out sometimes is just so wide and varied. Sandra, I'm sorry, I was going to call you doctor. Let's talk actually about your story. You found out that you have multiple sclerosis. When did you find out that you have multiple sclerosis?
I found out in April of 2006. I had been in practice as a neurologist for approximately 16 years. And was having some unusual symptoms, which I had ignored for many, many months, being a very busy person, mother of two. And I got to the point where I was realizing that the symptoms were limiting me. I had started to train to run a half marathon for the Leukemia Foundation with team and training. And in my first training run of 5 miles, I truly felt as if there were logs on my legs instead of legs.
Mm.
I was just dragging them. You know, I would run so many yards, and I would have to walk, and then run, and then walk. And it was grueling, and it was just out of character. So I proceeded for some testing and misdiagnosed myself. And, I consulted with a neurologist who I had trained under, who was the chairman of the Department of Neurology at Temple Hospital. And when I called him, he asked me what my reflexes were like, and told him, I don't know. And he said, come on in. And as he was checking me out, I realized immediately what it was.
Mm.
So we went from there.
You were a neurologist. That's something I want to highlight, because I had an OBGYN on who had breast cancer. And she, too, you know, busy schedule, you know, family, doctors. I mean, you guys are amazingly, you know, have intense careers. And she, too, waited, unfortunately, a long time. And she had, you know, advanced stage breast cancer. So it's always amazing to me, the doctors, you guys are a little hard-headed. Don't take care of yourselves.
I think that there's a tendency to put everybody else first before yourself.
Right, right.
And, presume that you'll just get through whatever the problem is. So I chose to withdraw from private practice. I chose to stop seeing patients, and was fortunately very blessed to be able to sell my practice to someone else and focus on my health, my family, and, trying to find out what would be the best treatment for me.
Go ahead. Let you finish there.
I was just going to say, since then, which is almost 5 years, I worked for a couple of semesters teaching at a community college. Most recently, I started working in administrative healthcare, and have just been fortunate that I can work from home on the computer and on the telephone.
That's excellent, excellent. So that's another hope for people who do get diagnosed with MS. Again, it's just so varied. Everybody is different. Let's talk a little bit about the different types of MS. I know there's relapsing, remitting, there's progressive. And then some people maybe start out relapsing, remitting, and then become progressive. Just talk to the audience about that a little bit.
Sure. In general, MS is an extremely unpredictable condition. And though we may say someone has relapsing, remitting MS, which will mean, for instance, a person may all of a sudden wake up and over a two-day period or so experience loss of vision in one eye. Or they may wake up one day and have terrible imbalance and just can't get from point A to point B without falling. Or they may wake up with paralysis. And then over several weeks period, the symptoms will resolve almost 100%. And then they'll be relatively normal at their baseline for months or even a year. And then, boom, another relapse may happen. So we call that relapsing remitting. I think it's a little bit of a misnomer, because people who have relapsing remitting MS will have chronic daily symptoms that they suffer from. And people don't always talk about them. Things like terrible fatigue, bladder problems, concentration problems, they just can't focus. Then the other types that you mentioned, primary progressive, is more of a condition where the nervous system is attacked and a person has a deficit or a problem like weakness that just gets worse and worse and worse over months, and they never get better in between. And those people also suffer from fatigue and bladder problems and cognitive problems. And then, as you mentioned, that relapsing remitting type may convert and become primary progressive. I think one
of them... talked about the daily symptoms. I think that's an important highlight. Some of those are like tingling, spasticity, the visual, and also heat sometimes can affect, not all, but I know some people with MS.
Heat definitely affects many people who have MS. It just worsens their fatigue, and in some cases will worsen symptoms like tingling or paralysis. So, you know, one important thing for people who have MS or support those who have MS to know is that air conditioning is important, and there really is not much reason to not get air conditioning in this area. The National MS Society Greater Delaware Valley Chapter has funds to support people who need that kind of device, and if they don't have the finances for it, they need to contact our chapter.
Yeah, let me mention that again, that you are here on behalf of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, and their website is nationalmssociety.org. And as she just mentioned, they do have a wonderful air conditioning program. You can apply to get an air conditioner for your home, and so that's a wonderful program, much needed. And if you know anybody who has MS, I mean, air conditioners break down. They don't last forever. So if you know someone who needs one, please reach out on their behalf to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Now, one of the things that you and I talked about the other day is that you run a support group, yes?
I co-lead a support group, and I do have to be specific about that because, honestly, I could not do it without my co-leader. Her name is Terry. Terry's a nurse in this area, and she came to the support group, which I had started with another woman, actually, in the beginning. And if it weren't for Terry, I just wouldn't be able to continue to co-lead the group. We meet in Mount Laurel every fourth Thursday of the month. We typically have 6 or 8 or maybe 10 people come to our meetings. And sometimes our meetings are just sessions where we visit together, but we all have a common problem, and we can understand each other's problems much better than people who aren't going through this. And frequently, someone will say, "Have you heard of such and such treatment?" And another person will say, "Yes. And I went to a certain doctor, and it was excellent." Or somebody may say, "I've been having a really big problem with fatigue, and this, that, and the other medication are not working. Anybody have any ideas?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really find the group very helpful to me. You might think that, well, she's a neurologist. She should be able to have access to anything and everything. And I have to be frank, that's not the case.
That's not the case.
No. It's not.
No. No, nobody knows everything, and that's why, again, I do the shows, and we talked also about just in general support groups, no matter what your issue is are very helpful. Now, there are some people, though, because of mobility issues and things of that nature, they can't get out. So I do want to mention that the MS Society has a wonderful online community of resources, social networking things that are available where you can connect with people on MySpace, on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. They have all different kinds of links. And so they have chat rooms and message boards where you can post questions and concerns and get responses from other people who are dealing with MS directly or indirectly. So if you can't get out to an actual support group, which there are many in the area, that's another option for you. Also, I want to mention, I know recently I saw I'm in the University City area, and at the Y at 52nd and Chestnut, I think 52nd and Chestnut, for African-Americans, there is a support group, MS support group, and that's on I think it's on a Friday, the fourth Friday of every month at the YMCA at 52nd and Chestnut. So I want to highlight that also. Now, one of the things, this illness affects more women than men. Not that men don't get MS, but it seems to affect more women than men. Is that true, Sandra?
It certainly is. It affects more women than men. It typically does not affect African Americans, though I can call to mind right now a black man who I treated who had MS, and that's even more unusual. It's more common in northern latitudes, and we really don't know what is the cause. There are lots of theories about genetic susceptibility plus some sort of environmental trigger, such as a virus, but it's really not known. You were mentioning all of these services from the society that were social type networks. I just wanted to mention that they also have programs that can be participated in online. There's a program at the Art Museum where people go to view artwork and have a docent give them, you know, the usual tour. People who are homebound can participate in that through their computer. I find that very refreshing, that somebody doesn't to feel like they're, you know, isolated. And that
that's a key word there. Yeah, isolated. Also, I've seen some other programs, travel programs. You know, people are not able maybe to travel, even in the United States or outside. There are some travel programs I've seen online. I'll try to find the link again, and I'll post that here and also on the fan page, where it's somewhat like a webinar type of thing, but you can basically kind of travel while you're home and see different parts of the world, because you may or may not be able to, you know, to get to those locations. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the medicines that are available. That's an important support for people, and that helps people thrive. And as I mentioned, my grandmother was not able to take advantage of many of the medicines now. I know Rebif, Copaxone, Avonex, Betaceron, and now on the horizon, a lot of oral medications that are available. How, you know, as a doctor, how do you decide which one of these is best for a person?
It's pretty much tailor-made. I think that each of the immunomodulating medicines that you mentioned, what we used to call the ABC drugs, Avonex, Betaceron, Copaxone, and then, add in Rebif. There's always a difference in somebody's ability to inject themselves with the medication. So you may be tailoring it to whether or not somebody has a support group or support network that could help them with those injections. For instance, I take Avonex. That's once a week, and it's a deep intramuscular injection. Now, I am a physician, and I could inject my leg every week. Can't inject my arms myself, but I actually have my husband do it, because as much as I'm well able to stick other people, I'm not very well able to stick myself. Other people who don't have medical training surely may have a lot of difficulty with that. So on the other side, you've got medications that are daily injections, and they may be subcutaneous, so it's not as deep, but maybe somebody really can't do it every day, let alone every week. Mm. Now, the oral medications...
And then the side effects of the different medications, too, right?
But there are. And I've been on Avonex approximately 4 years, and I still have side effects every week. They don't just seem to resolve. Sometimes some people are fortunate enough to not have those side effects after being on the medication for 6 months or a year. They kind of just wear away.
Okay.
Not everybody is that fortunate.
So
the
now how do you...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how do you manage that? I mean, managing the different side effects. I know I was reading about taking Advil, Tylenol, different things to help alleviate. Are those some suggestions you might give to people to help deal with the side effects, swelling of the injection site area?
Yes. Many physicians will recommend that somebody pre-medicates perhaps an hour before their injection with an anti-inflammatory, like you mentioned, like Advil. Tylenol, typically not as effective. I think that others may need something stronger. Sometimes some people have to take a steroid, a prednisone pill, before they take their injection. And one anti-inflammatory will work for somebody and won't work for somebody else. I went through trials of, I believe, 3 or 4 different anti-inflammatories, and then a trial of steroids, and then a trial, finally, of one other anti-inflammatory before I found something that works for me. Unfortunately, the medication that I found that works for me is no longer on the market.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So it's a constant battle. It's a constant educating yourself throughout, you know, the time of just living, you know, like you said, you know, you may start out with one symptom, you have another symptom a couple years later, a couple months later. So it can be just tiring constantly being aware of the information, and you can't be aware of everything. So the support groups are important, hooking up with one of the different societies out there. The MS Society is not the only multiple sclerosis organization out there. There's also the National Society for Multiple Sclerosis. There's the International Society. There's all different things. So there's somebody out there working to try to battle this illness. Now, we talked about the heat issue. Now, I want to mention there are vest cooling devices that are also good, so that people can, who have MS, can go out to the beach and things of that nature, depending on, you know, their level of tolerance. But there's different vests and things. Are you familiar with those?
I am familiar with the vests. And I will tell you that the summer, I believe it was the summer that I had been diagnosed with MS, was the summer that we were going to stay with a good friend of ours who is a native of Senegal. We were spending 2 weeks in Senegal, Africa. And
oh my God.
I was very concerned about the heat, so I ordered a vest. And when the vest arrived, it has multiple pockets. It's khaki-colored, and in each of these pockets, you put these cold packs that are better than typical cold packs. But it was a little reminiscent of some sort of terrorist kind of vest.
Okay.
So there's a time and a place that you can wear this kind of thing.
Yes. Now, people also have issues being cold, so they may need things to warm. And I've seen mitts and things of that nature, things for your feet. So sometimes people have the opposite, where they're too cold, even though the temperature could be 75 or 80, but they're cold. Yes, that's also a symptom people can get.
I think that is probably less common, but I have heard that also, yes.
Yes.
I think one of the things to emphasize is that it's such an unpredictable condition. And one of the focuses of our chapter now is to try to get people to understand the impacts on somebody's life. I recently was in a building going to an appointment, and I heard a woman speaking, and as she came around the corner, I saw her in a scooter, and I thought, she has MS. And there was a reason for us to introduce ourselves to each other, and she had been a young first-year law student when MS hit her. She was never able to graduate. It just changed her life entirely.
So that's important. Also, it's important to note that people may not be in a wheelchair, may be walking around and look fine and have symptoms. People have tingling, people have nerve pain, the fatigue that you mentioned, visual things that you will look at an individual could be sitting right next to you, and you have no idea that they have multiple sclerosis. So I think it's important to realize that that people can be very close to you and you know, be dealing with different issues.
I agree with you about that very strongly, and I call that invisible chronic illness, and I'm one of those. I walk and talk and look as ordinary as most other people, and you, if you meet me, would at first glance not have any knowledge that I have MS and not have an understanding of what I'm dealing with on a chronic daily basis, and more than half of those who have MS are like that.
I think that's important for friends to understand. Yes, I want to say that's important for people who are friends or family members of people who have MS is understand. Sometimes they have to say no. They can't maybe go someplace or say no to reserve their energy to do other things. And it's not not that they don't want to be with you or hang out with you, that they just, you know, they need to reserve their energy so that they can, you know, maybe take care of their house or, you know, their family or whatever. And there are invisible symptoms that they have, you know. I know there are times when my grandmother, I couldn't go visit my grandmother at certain times, like in really early in the morning, you know, took her a little bit to, you know, get up and move about and stuff like that. So I would go later in the day. And, you know, when I was younger, I just really didn't understand that and was like, you know, what's the big, you know, deal? Why can't I just come now? And but that's something your girlfriend or boyfriend or sister may not be able to go partying with you every Saturday because of, you know, things that they're dealing with that you think, oh, well, they can just push past it. If that's not the case. We only have a couple minutes left. I know we said we weren't going to go the whole 30 minutes, but there's so much to talk about. Real briefly, let's just mention about some alternative medicine options like massage, acupuncture. What do you think about these types of things, meditation? Do you feel those things are helpful? What is your opinion?
I definitely think those things are helpful. Different members in my support group participate in different treatments, like you've mentioned. One goes to an acupuncturist. Another one gets a regular massage. There is another concept that is coming out now that I'd like to mention, and it's total disease management. There's a facility in our area, I believe the name is Total Rehab and Fitness, where, you know, you can go to do physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, weight loss, mental health treatment, all of it in one location. And I think the focus is to try to maintain some regular support of whatever therapy type you need for long term. You know, it's very unfortunate that some people may have a relapse and their insurance company provides 3 weeks of three times a week therapy, and then they're cut off.
The idea is let's manage
this disease chronically.
Yeah, that's something that my grandmother dealt with because I've noticed when she was able to do the therapy, physical therapy, she would be able to move about. She had a lot more energy. And when I said, you know, she wasn't doing like some intense, you know, training for a marathon, but just small, you know, weights and stretching and things when the person would come. So ongoing support is very important, trying to help your family and friends get that support, staying in contact. I want to thank you, Dr. D'Antonio. I'm going to end with that, calling you Dr. D'Antonio, for coming on the show. I want to thank the National Multiple Sclerosis Society for connecting me with you. And I hope you have a wonderful Saturday and a wonderful week. This past week was National MS Awareness Week, so I've been posting different things on Twitter and on the fan page about that. So please, everyone, make yourself, it behooves you to become more aware of this particular illness. Thank you again, Sandra, for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for your support
thank
of
you.
The society.
Okay, you have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening to today's show. Please learn more about MS at the nationalmssociety.org. Find out about support groups online and also in your community. And just learn more about what's going on. Someone you know may be affected by this illness. I hope you have a wonderful Saturday, and I also hope you stay tuned. I'll be speaking with life coach Rhonna Walker. She is a breast cancer survivor, so please stay tuned for that.
Hi, I'm Phil Kogan, host of the Amazing Race reality show. But one reality no one chooses as part of their life is multiple sclerosis. Join me and move it to end MS during MS Awareness Week. Whether you volunteer, bike, walk, advocate, educate, support, every action you take moves us closer to a world free of MS and motivates families, friends, and neighbors to join the MS movement. Progress on MS can't wait. Move it today. Visit nationalmssociety.org.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin.
What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back...
Ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get-up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.